It's time for America's most unique motorsports show, Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor, brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. Kirk Elliott is in the house. We're going to talk a little bit about the XR Super Series up at Stewart Speedway here in just a moment. Steve Post will be joining us here in a little bit, but let's jump right into last night's action with the XR Super Series up at Stewart Speedway, Stewart International Speedway, Kirk Elliott. Kirk will not call it International Speedway after his years of working up there. How many years did you work up there? 7 years, Kirk?
7 years.
Did you tell me, the owner has since passed away that used to own that racetrack, right?
Yeah, a guy by the name of Gail Miller owned that racetrack, and it was unique because he was the flagman, the competition director. He paid out the purse when the races were over. He ran the show.
Yeah.
And he wore a striped shirt like you'd see a referee would wear at a baseball game, and he was the man in charge. And his wife, Sharon.
Everybody knew it too, right?
Right. Everybody knew it.
Right.
And his wife, Sharon, was the one of the scores there. Unfortunately, she died of cancer at the age of 40, a year after I left there. Lovely lady.
Yeah.
But Gail Miller was also the flagman at Knoxville at that time.
Mm.
And he had three big late model shows at Knoxville.
Hold on. Let me lead into this, Kurt.
Yeah.
So you're telling me Knoxville had a late model nationals before the late model nationals that we know of now.
That's right.
What year was that?
We're talking 1975, 6, and 7. Right in there.
How old were
right
you
in
then?
That time. I was about 20, something like that. 21.
And were you announcing at the time over at Stewart at that time?
Yes. I my first year at Stewart in 77, I wasn't. When he started this late model event at Knoxville, I was the announcer at Knoxville.
Right.
And but first year at Stewart was 1977. The last year he ran what they called the Fall Jamboree, and that was the forerunner of what we now know as the late model Knoxville Nationals. And it was a wild time because it wasn't the best run event. There was a lot of cars. He put up a lot of money. One year it was so cold that somebody started a bonfire in the infield and caught fire. They had to put that out. There were a lot of crazy stuff that happened. But they only had it 3 years. And then the late model Knoxville Nationals didn't start until 2004.
Right. Yeah.
But a lot of people don't know there was a late model Knoxville Nationals before
the event we now know. Did you tell me that somebody caught fire when they started a bonfire down in the infield? Somebody caught themselves on fire?
It was so cold one year. It was really cold. It was like late September, early October. I can't remember.
Right.
But it was really cold, so people started fires in the infield.
Yeah.
And then one year the lights went out, and people parked their cars along the back street with headlights trying to put light on the track. There were so many
at Knoxville.
At Knoxville. There were so many. That's before they had the great lights they have now. But there was some crazy stuff that happened during those events. And I think the fair board said, well, enough's enough. Let's not do this anymore.
So they only put up with it for 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
And that was 75, 6, 7?
75, 6, 7.
Right.
That's when they had it. But Gail Miller, the owner of Stewart Speedway, also served as the flagman at Knoxville during that time.
Right. This is before Doug.
Before Doug Clark.
Right.
Yes. People think Doug Clark was there forever.
Ever.
No.
What year did Doug start? Do you remember?
I can't remember. Was it early? Maybe he was after.
Did he get hired when you got fired by Cappy?
I think
roughly about that time.
Roughly about that time. I want to say that Gail Miller flagged for maybe a year or two after I left.
Right.
I can't remember for sure.
Yeah.
But anyway, when I didn't get hired back up there, Cappy took over. You know, I worked for Ray Grimes.
But he replaced you with a legend.
He did. Jack Miller replaced. But anyway, he said to me, well, why don't you come work for me at Stewart? So That's how that started.
That's how it all went. So last night up at Stewart, not much of a race, Kirk.
Yeah, it was disappointing.
At the start of the race, there was a little action right at the start.
Great action at the start of the race. But, you know, Mike Van Genderen, who is the owner at Stewart Speedway now,
right?
He told the guys at the driver's meeting on Monday night, I think I said this on yesterday's show, and I said, he told everybody, I'm going to farm the track
before the A-Main.
Right before the A-Main.
Right.
Because I don't want it to rubber down. Because if I don't do it, it's going to take rubber. And so he did just that. And Monday night, I thought it was a good race. It took a while for it to
come in.
But once it did, it turned out to be a great racetrack. Now,
but
McCready and everybody complained after the race. Right. I thought there was some great racing behind Davenport was so strong on Monday that he overshadowed a lot of the great racing that went on behind him, which was perfect.
Right.
And so you heard McCready. We talked about this yesterday. And you don't normally hear Tim McCready.
He doesn't complain much.
Complain a lot. And he said, well, you know, maybe they should have brought out the support class to widen it out because the first 20 laps was a waste, quote unquote. That's what he said.
A waste of 20 laps.
A waste of 20 laps. Yeah. So night two, Van Genderen listened to all of these complaints. He said, you know what? Okay, we'll farm the
racetrack.
We'll
do it your way.
We'll do it your way. We'll farm the racetrack before the stock car feature, which they did. They completely farmed it. And the only thing they did between the stock car race and the late model race was tickle the top side. They left the bottom completely alone, never touched it. But they did work on the top side. So the first 15-20, first half of the race, we saw some great action.
You know, Jimmy Owens, Chris Madden, Jonathan Davenport, and Bobby Pierce were putting on a hell of a race there for a bit.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
But then all of a sudden,
it flipped.
You saw, and Pierce was still working the top side, but then he got down to the bottom too late by that time. Madden got past him. Once Madden got past him, it was too late for Bobby Pierce to retaliate. And down to the bottom, everybody went, and it was a freight train the last 15, 20 laps of the race. It was disappointing.
It might have been more than that, Kurt.
Could have been.
Yeah.
But a bulk of the last half of the race, it was freight train locked, and there was not one yellow flag the entire race.
And nobody got off the bottom. And when Madden caught the lap cars, he just stayed in behind him because he knew nobody was going to pass
him.
Nobody
was going to pass.
Right.
So we watched just a freight train, the last 15, 20 laps, everybody right down on the bottom. But you know what? The track owner, Mike Van Genderen, warned him that's what was going to happen.
He told him, didn't he?
He told him that. And he did it their way, and that's what we got.
Yeah.
It was kind of unfortunate, but he knows his racetrack pretty well, and he told him that's what was going to happen.
So the bottom line is, if a promoter says that he knows his dirt, listen to him.
You better listen to it. And here's the ironic part of it. Tim McCready didn't qualify for the A-Main last night. He didn't. That is nuts. He had a bad time trial. He didn't make the top three transfer in the heat, and he was
a couple of spots out of the B.
And he didn't have enough points, or they had two provisionals, the top points getter in the XR series, plus the top qualifier that hadn't already made it in. Well, he didn't qualify for any of those two. Scott Blomquist and Matt Furman were the two provisionals. So Tim McCready, who complained the most about it the night before, never got in the show.
Scott Blomquist was the first car to get lapped last night, by the way.
Yes. He started dead last.
Yeah.
The night before, he pulled off the track.
Oh, he did.
So,
I saw that where he pulled off. Yeah,
Brandon Overton, who didn't make the show on Monday night, got in last night, and of course the lockdown track really hurt him too. He finished way back third from last.
I know it. Yeah.
So he didn't have a good 2 days up there, but Chris Madden did. Won $20,000 last night after Jonathan Davenport, who finished third last night, won the big money on Monday night.
But that was a pretty good race between Chris Madden, Bobby Pierce, Jonathan Davenport, and Jimmy Owens there for a little bit. The four of them were racing for the lead.
Yeah.
That was pretty good stuff. Right at the beginning of the race, though.
Right. And here's one thing great about Stewart Speedway, and this was the same 40 years ago. If you can get up on the high side of turn number two, you can rock it off the second turn down the back straightaway. You can bid a big run. It was that way 40 years ago. It's that way now. And the one guy that knows that better than anybody is Ryan Gustin. He was doing it on Monday night. He did it again last night. But people were catching on. You had guys like Mike Marler. Bobby Pierce caught on in a hurry. He knew that that worked coming off turn number two. And Bobby Pierce, who didn't work the high side as much as I thought he would on Monday night, he was doing it last night in his heat race as well as the main event, and that's why he was up there challenging.
Did Ryan's dad race there back in the day?
Yeah. Rick Gustin raced there.
Yeah, he ended up running ninth.
And he was good.
Night. Yeah.
You know, I was telling you about all the big guys that were the big names back then.
Right.
I talked with Alan Cooney, who his son Todd races up there. He was in the show last night. He said, yep, they're all dead now. He said, all those guys that we watched win races back then, they've all passed on. Does that make you feel old or what?
It does. Yeah.
Oh, man.
It probably made you feel old.
It did. But, you know, it, for me personally, it was an experience being up there. It's probably been 35 years since I've been there. But just a flood of memories come back walking around there last night.
There wasn't a wall there when you were up there.
No wall on the outside. Of course, everything else is different. New lights, new grandstand. A lot of things are different back then. But the one thing that is the same,
the track.
Racetrack.
Yeah. Awesome. Except for the wall.
Yeah, the wall is the only thing
different. Austin, how you been doing, buddy? You doing all right? You're sitting back there relaxing right now. We kind of saw the same thing last night with the USAC midgets down at Red Dirt, didn't we? It was kind of all on the bottom, wasn't it,
Austin? We saw the exact same thing.
Yeah.
You know, Red Dirt was, I feel like I could, you know, kind of live up to maybe the best race of the night. You know, yesterday morning we were talking about the race, and, you know, they went out there and they didn't do any track prep before the feature. They just moved the tractor tires in and opened up all the moisture that's been there all night long, and it just ultimately locked down the track. They moved them in so far that you could get both rear tires down in the moisture, and anytime you can put both rears in some grip, it's going to, you know, override and be better than momentuming it on the top. And that's what we saw last night.
I think the biggest mistake they made is pushing those tires in, don't you think?
You know, I don't think it was a mistake. The mistake they made was they went too far with it. They went,
if they could have just, where the left rear was down in it,
yeah,
not both rear tires.
They got
right?
it so far down there, you could carry a lot of momentum in and have the moisture help catch the car, and you can carry a lot of speed to the bottom. And like I said, you could put both rear tires in, and both better, two rear tires is better than one rear tire in the moisture. And all they had to do was maybe bring it up about halfway, like go halfway in, and stick the left rear in it. You stick the left rear in it, and then it forces guys to kind of slow their pace down and commit to getting the left rear in every lap. And at that point, it will somewhat equalize both lanes, and you can see maybe slide jobs and two lane racing. And we saw that with about 5 to 8 laps to go. The bottom finally burnt in a hard line when the right rear tire had ran, and it got really slick. So the guys were having to be really cautious getting in to get the left rear in the moisture and get a good drive off.
Yep.
And that opened the door for Justin Grant. Justin Grant was the lone car pretty much, you know, running the top and carrying the momentum. And we saw him pass, I believe it was 2 or 3 cars in the last 3 laps and break into the second place spot ahead of his teammate Thomas Mesrall.
He was the only guy making that work.
He was, and you know, it just took him 25 laps to get to that point. And you know, I think maybe the track might have burned off if the tires were, you know, a little farther out, but we would have seen, you know, better racing early on in the race.
All right, so let's quit talking about rubber down racetracks. Let's talk about a hell of a race last night with the World of Outlaws at Attica last night, Brad Doty Classic. I thought that was a hell of a race last night. Did you guys? What'd you think of it, Austin?
It was a pretty good race.
Yeah,
I like
Attica. Did you think Schatz was going to get him right there at the end?
I mean,
no?
he was close. I don't know if he would have got to him if. I don't know. I just Larson kind of had the preferred line. It kind of, you know, he was in traffic. He was, you know, maybe, you know, he could navigate through the traffic a little bit better.
Yeah.
And then Donnie ran him down with a was it? I think it was less than 10 to go he got to him.
At one point, Donnie Schatz was running seventh, right,
yeah.
Kirk? When we looked up there, yeah. He was running seventh, and he worked his way up to the field and caught Larson.
Yeah, so,
right.
You know, Donnie's always really good when it gets really slick. I mean,
right.
Anytime the track gets slow and you're forced to, you know, stop running the top or the bottom and search around and it backs the pace up is when Donnie gets really good. And we saw that, and like you don't drive from seventh to second and run down Larson and
right
in a field like that. You know, I think if he might have had a restart, he might have got to him, or if Larson got checked up by a lap car, it might have been a different story. But we did see with a couple laps to go that they got to Casey Kane, and Casey Kane was kind of
blocked him a little.
He did. He was racing him a little bit, and then until he saw, you know, Larson's nose get to him, and he knew he was lap traffic and didn't need to be in
but
that.
But Schatz
that race.
Almost ran into him coming down the front straightaway at that one time.
Yeah, and that was the point that sealed the deal for Larson and sealed Schatz's shot at and even having a shot at Larson.
Yeah.
How about that move that Kyle Larson made around Brad Sweet up on the high side of that racetrack?
When he slipped off the back,
wow.
When he went for the lead, and he slipped off the back of the track and still made the pass for the lead.
Unbelievable.
That was pretty cool, wasn't it, Austin?
Yeah. I mean, Attica's really kind of known for, you know, guys driving off the backstretch, and there's times where it'll bite you, that there's times it will really benefit you. And Larson was you know, one of the benefactors of it. But, you know, I think if Larson could have had a better restart the first two restarts, Larson didn't get fired off well at all.
Right.
He was always 5-6 points behind Brad after the first lap, and he kept trying to, when they would fire off, he kept trying to get to the cushion and use the cushion as something to lead against and get a run, and it only worked once, and it worked the one time that it mattered, and it got him to the lead. But I think if he could have, you know, maybe fired off a little better the first two shots, he might have
right.
might have taken the lead earlier in the race, but, you know, it doesn't matter. He won the race. But, yeah, I don't know if that third restart he has doesn't go his way. I don't think you see hear us talking about Larson winning the race. It might be Brad or Donnie winning it.
So was the biggest news of the night when Kyle Larson was being interviewed in Victory Lane after the race, and he talked about Donnie Schatz racing him so clean. And to be honest with you, he just threw the midget guys right under the bus, didn't he? He just said, I don't know if the guys are watching right now because they're racing down at Red Dirt, but he said, this is how you race people. You race people clean like this. Donnie Schatz is the best at it. He was kind of insinuating that the young kids that are racing down in the midgets are a little too aggressive, right?
I wouldn't say they're overly aggressive. You get to be aggressive no matter what, right?
Yeah.
Driving over their head and not caring for anybody
other's equipment.
Yes, equipment and them as a driver. I mean, he's spot on about that. I mean, Robert Ballou said it best, you know. And 75% of the midget drivers that are young kids, they roll in there at 5 o'clock with their suitcase, AirPods, and they don't care. They don't care that the team's been there, you know, working all day, or anybody else that has to do it, you know, by themselves. They don't get to come in there with a ton of money and get to show up and drive, you know. And they just take advantage of it. They don't care who you are or what you're doing. They'll just use you up and spit you out. But no, I think
you've been on the end of those too, haven't you?
Yeah, I think it was finally time somebody said something and somebody with
clout.
Yeah, like Larson, that it's gonna leave an impact. I feel
these
like.
Kids don't have to work on those cars if they wreck them, do they?
They don't work on them.
They don't work on them. The most work they do outside the race car is clean their helmet,
put tear offs on.
If they even do that, they might have somebody do it for them.
Listen, Austin, it's frustrating when you and your dad work and do everything you can to put a car together, and then when you have somebody come out there and race you dirty like that, it's frustrating, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It's just
because you deal with it at the 360 level too, right?
Yeah, a little bit. It's not as bad in the 360 as it is in the midget. You know, you don't see a lot of teams. You don't see a lot of renter riders. Well, they buy rides.
Right.
That's just mainly midget racing, and you know, we're still lucky in sprint car racing that we still have a lot of you know, well-seasoned veteran adults in there, and it's not, you know, young, you know, 13, 14, and 15-year-olds like the midgets. It's just oversaturated with young kids, and that's just what you're going to get. I mean, they don't have, you know, I was fortunate when I started racing sprint cars. I learned from, you know, Randy Martin, Blake Hahn, you know, guys that have been around, Sam, guys that have been around sprint car racing the entire life, and they know how to race, you know. You get in there and race a USAC midget or a Power Eye midget. You're racing, you know, kids your age that are just, you know, wild and off the wall as you are.
Right.
I was so proud of Kyle Larson to come in and give that kind of respect to the 10-time World of Outlaw champion, Donnie Schatz.
No doubt.
And throw him a huge amount of respect to say, all right, kids, that's the way you race. Look
right.
at Donnie Schatz
this
if you
is
want
how
to know
you do
how
it.
To race.
This is how you do it.
Right.
Right.
I right. thought that was great.
I don't know if you guys could hear the fans in the background, but after the race was over, one of the fans, you could hear him clearly in the background, said, I wanted Schatz to win. And then there was a lady that said, right after he said that, said, I didn't want Schatz to win. So there's still some Schatz haters out there.
Yeah, but they don't hate him as much as they did 10 years ago.
No, not nearly as bad. You know, is it me, or does it seem like Donnie Schatz has got more speed than he's had maybe in the last month? It seems like that.
Yeah.
Didn't they take their engine program to somebody else and get him to tune it up a little bit, Austin? Is there some truth to that? Do you know?
Not that I know of. I'll look into it, but
there's some truth to that.
I'm not sure what they've done different. I'll definitely do some research on it
and come back.
But yeah, I mean, he definitely does look faster. He was really good at Wilmot last week in Wisconsin, and he was good last night. So, you know, it's a good point in the season to, you know, maybe find something or maybe make
right.
a change because of the month of money coming up and Eldora starting tonight. So, yeah, I hope we get the old Donnie Schatz back. I miss seeing Donnie, you know, pick up, you know, a dozen or so wins every year and, you know, listening to all the boos and,
right.
and, you know, chatter in the crowd. But, yeah, we hate to see a winner, but we hate to not see that guy win. You know, I'm kind of saying.
I'm going to ask this question to Steve Post, but I want to ask you guys first. Do you think when Kyle Larson gets into the lead that some drivers give up once he gets to the lead, do you think some people just throw in the towel once he gets to the lead?
I think if you do that, you're not a real racer.
But do you think that some people mentally implode when Kyle Larson gets to the lead? Yes or no?
Maybe some of them do, but Brent Marks certainly didn't give up
right.
last week on the Pennsylvania Sprint Week.
Now,
I don't think most of the top Brad Sweet, David Gravel, Carson Macedo, guys like that give up. No. I don't buy it.
Right.
I don't buy it for 1 minute. And you know that Donnie Schatz doesn't give up.
All right, your thoughts on that one, Austin?
No, I agree with Kirk. I mean, it just makes you work harder as a driver. You know, it's
mm-hmm.
you see, I guess you call him the GOAT, you know, leading the race, and you want to beat him. You want to be better than him. You want to be known as the guy
that beat
a Donnie Schatz or a Kyle Larson, and you're not going to roll over and give up. If you roll over and give up, you don't need to be, you know, racing because, I mean, there's just – it's never easy.
Right.
And you're going to be forced to work for it and – yeah, I mean, you should be striving to beat Larson and those guys every night just to make yourself better.
And on the other side of that, when you outrun Kyle Larson, that gives you a boost of confidence, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like you won the Knoxville Nationals is what it probably feels like.
Yeah.
It feels like you're king of the world.
Yeah.
No doubt. We're heading into the next four nights at Eldora Speedway is going to be unbelievable to see.
Man, I can't wait.
How Kyle Larson's going to be able to navigate through everything coming up this weekend. He won the Kings Royal last year. Can he do it again? And, of course, tomorrow night, the historical big one returns, which is really cool, $100,000 to win.
Yeah. But what's really going to be cool on Saturday night when they race for $175,000 to win.
Wow, a lot of money on the line this week.
I can't wait, man. It's going to be great. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Steve Post is going to join us here on the show, his weekly visit with the Racing Boys right here on RBN, the Racing Boys Broadcasting Network. Mostly Motorsports is brought to you by Lucas Oil Products. It works. We'll be right back with Steve Post. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
There is less than 1/100th of an inch of motor oil protecting your car's engine. Friction and heat causes engine oil to experience thermal breakdown, weakening its ability to protect the engine and its parts. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer is specially formulated to resist thermal breakdown, protect vital engine parts, and extend the life of your engine. It also stops smoking, knocking, and oil consumption in worn engines. Lucas Heavy Duty Oil Stabilizer. Keep that engine alive.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Next to your vehicle's engine, your transmission is the most important component of your car. If it's not properly maintained, your car may not shift properly. By adding Lucas Transmission Fix to your transmission, it cleans and lubricates sticking valves for proper shifting, renews worn bands to stop slipping, stops seal leaks, will not void new car warranties, contains no harmful solvents. Lucas Transmission Fix. It works.
Here at Specialty Sportswear, in-house, we do all of the screen printing, all the embroidery. We do some vinyl. The other add specialty items like your pens, magnets, notepads, calendars. You can actually buy that, build your business, and make it larger. We have the largest screen printing process and the largest embroidery anywhere around in the area. We can do stuff all the way from your school clubs to sports teams, a professional look in the office. If you can imagine it, we can do it for you.
Missouri's must-play getaway, Osage National Golf Resort.
3 9-hole whole courses to choose from at the Lake of the Ozarks in the Osage River Valley. Stay and play packages in our first-class condos. A beautiful clubhouse complete with pro shop and exercise facilities. A large pool for relaxation and families. The Eagle View Sports Bar and Grill. Great wedding facilities. Go online and make your tee time today.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding Lucas Fuel Treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Lucas Fuel Treatment. It works.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.
You're listening to Mostly Motorsports with Scott Traylor.
Welcome back to Mostly Motorsports. I'm Scott Traylor, along with producer Austin O'Neill. We want to thank Kirk Elliott for sitting in with us, talking about Stewart Speedway last night. XR Super Series was up there, and not much of a race, but it was a pretty good race last night at Attica. And joining us now on the show to talk about it is our good friend from Wing Nation and MRN, Steve Post joins us now. Steve, how you doing, brother? Hello, Steve, are you there? Hey, now I got you, Steve. Hold on.
You didn't bring him on the air.
I didn't?
You just blocked him.
Oh, that's why. You got to push the button right. There you go. Hey, bringing him on now is a good friend of the Racing Boys, Steve Post. Postman, how you doing, my friend?
I'm doing well, Scott. Always great to catch up with you here midweek.
I fat fingered the button there. So, you know, you would think after all these years of operating that phone, I'd know what the hell I'm doing. But it just didn't happen. So, man.
That'll happen.
Well, some breaking news just came down the pipe here just a little bit ago. Kyle Larson is going to work with Flow Racing, and they're going to have this high-limit sprint car series. They're going to have 12 races next year. What do you think of that?
Well, I think I go back to Kyle Larson did a race, a late model race at Bulls Gap, Tennessee.
Right.
Back would have been the week before Easter in April.
Right.
And I don't know where you were at following along with it. I was at the race. But social media, and it might have been Brian Brown that got the discussion started, was why don't we have midweek high-dollar races in sprint cars? Come on, Flow Racing. And, you know, the conversation took off quite a bit there with some keyboard warriors with all kinds of theories, mm-hmm. but also a number of drivers and teams and people that are – you know, there's stakeholders in the game saying, yeah, we need this and we want to do this. And, you know, you get into the question of platinum drivers with World of Outlaws and how does that work? And that those are questions that remain to be asked. So here we are a few months later, and it looks like my friend Kendra Jacobs and Kyle Larson. And I think it's interesting that Kyle Larson is involved with this, although it's not a shocker. He's been partners with Flow Racing on races on the late model side. What I really find interesting is the other partner in this is Brad Sweet.
Right.
And so that just gets a little juicier when you think about that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what it all means. They have one race coming up this year and Putnamville, Indiana, I believe it is, coming up in August. And then it's a 12-race series next year. All the races will pay, 10 of the races will pay $23,000 to win. Two of them going to pay $50,000 to win. There's a $30,000 champions point fund for the 12 races. And I don't know, it's going to be interesting to see what happens, that's for sure.
Yeah. Steve, do you feel the pressure from the late models paying all these high-dollar races, do you think that's put a little pressure on the sprint car community a little bit for more higher-paying races? Do you feel like that a little bit?
I will correct one two-word phrase that right. you have been saying is a little bit. No, a lot.
A lot.
A lot of heat.
Yeah.
A lot of heat.
Yeah.
When you look at what is going on, there's not a sprint car driver in the country that doesn't look at the dirt late model world and be like, what in the wide world of sports is going on over
yep.
there?
Yep.
You know, we had Monday and Tuesday night racing this week for Pete's sake in the middle of July, $20,000 to win.
Right.
You know, I mean, this Chris Smokey Madden, picked the perfect year to become a true outlaw because he picked the year to become a true outlaw when all this money came on the line, and right. he's going to earn more money than he ever has before. Jonathan Davenport picked up $1 million a couple weeks ago at Eldora.
Right.
I mean, yeah, the sprint car world is a lot looking at the late model world and saying what's going on.
Do you think we'll ever see a time in sprint car racing where the dollars are going to be equal to what we see over on the late model side? I'm not sure that that's going to happen, but as you know, sprint car racing is the most dangerous form of dirt track racing. Those guys should get paid accordingly, shouldn't they?
Yeah. I don't know if we will. I think there's a couple of factors here. I think one of the differences in the late model world is there are multiple national, and national's an interesting word, multiple big time sanctioning bodies
mm-hmm.
promoting races in the late model side. You have the Lucas Oil Series, you have the World of Outlaws, you have this XR Series, and you have Flow Night in America.
Right.
So you have four nights, and then you have some independent races that pay big money that are not sanctioned by anybody. So you have this diversity of sanctioning bodies where no one group has an upper hand.
Mm-hmm.
The sprint car side, World of Outlaws are king, you know, and we understand that. And
right.
and they're able to, and they've done a wonderful job. There is 0% of this is critical of the world of Outlaws, and they've been able to take care of their drivers, so much so that the drivers sign agreements to remain exclusive with them.
Right.
Because there is still way more money in the world of Outlaws than anywhere else in sprint car racing.
Right.
You know, and so I think it gets interesting when you have a little series like this, because you do then get a little competition. I think what's happening at some other tracks, I think Skagit hosting a $50,000 to win NARC King of the West
right.
series race. I think Port Royal hosting $53,000 to win All-Star race, you know, the Tuscarora 50. I think that I don't know that it'll ever get there. And I think the other determining factor is that while there's a lot of sprint cars in the world, there is a lot more the back gate on a late model big show. I mean, you know, what do they have? They'll have 50 or 60 cars
right.
up there at the Kings Royal this weekend. They had 100 cars up there, you know, for their big late model races. So I think there's a back gate change and difference as well. But I don't know that it'll ever get there, but it seems like it's getting closer, although the late model world is skyrocketing out of control right now.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, I'm sure you watched that race at Attica last night. Did you think that Donnie Schatz was going to get around Larson there at the end of the race?
The last couple of laps, I had my doubts, but the way he had advanced from seventh up there.
Right.
You know, I just kind of thought the locomotive was moving, you know, and, you know, and I think I think another caution or another few laps, I think he just, you know, you don't have another caution that doesn't happen. You don't have a few laps. The checkered flag is the checkered flag. I think he ran out of time is what pretty much what happened.
I think so, too. Yeah, I agree with you on that one. Let me ask. Yeah. Donnie Schatz seems like he's a little bit faster lately. I don't know what's happened in the last month or so, but I don't know if I'm correct on this rumor that I thought I heard. Maybe I didn't hear it. I don't know. But it did Tony Stewart take his motors to somebody else, and is somebody else tinkering on those Ford motors right now?
I don't know the answer to that, Scott.
Yeah.
And I heard you ask the question before the break, and I've been racking my brains. We had Donnie on stage with us at Houston's. The consistent problem that Donnie has had with the motors is too much power.
Oh.
These Fords are big smoke. And every engine builder on the planet is looking to rev up, tune up, boost up horsepower.
Right.
Their challenge has been, how do we tune this, detune it to the racetrack? And Donnie talked to us as early last year on Wing Nation about, you know, we've got such big power. And the other factor of it is, and here's the thing, Donnie Schatz, okay, let's even look at last year with Tony Stewart Racing.
Mm-hmm.
You had two drivers driving those cars. You had Donnie Schatz, who is a finesse. When the track slows down, Donnie goes faster than everybody else.
Right.
Feathering the throttle. And he had success last year. But in that 14 car was the madman, Kerry Mattson, who's a gasser. And that high horsepower worked perfectly well for Kerry Mattson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he picked up some big wins across the country. So I think that the engine is just, and so I don't know if they've done anything. I don't know if they've changed anything to your recollection there, Scott. I don't know that there's anything to that at all, yes or no on that. But I know the consistent problem with these Ford's engine is just too much power. And you know as well as I do,
right,
that sounds like a good problem to have, but it's not always a good problem to have. And especially when you're a finesse driver like Donnie Schatz, it might be the worst problem you can have.
Donnie said something to the effect last night when they were interviewing him that now the motor is to where, I can't remember the phrase he used, but it was something about where he was up on his toe and he could run the throttle a little bit more with the toe of his foot. I don't know. He did you hear him say that last night? He said something to the effect of that.
Yeah, it is. And that's why, like, Donnie Schatz is one of the immortal race car drivers, because he breaks it down to his toe versus his heel versus the ball of his foot and everything else.
Right, yeah.
You know what I mean? And so, and he is, and the challenge right now is the world of outlaws are so good, no matter what you do with that race car, no matter what you do with your foot, no matter what you do with your mind, no matter what you do with any part of yourself, the competition level is so good that it's got to be flawless. And if that throttle doesn't feel right, if you're just a half a percentage point off, then you might be racing for second, third, fourth, and fifth on a regular basis. But it seems to me, to your bigger point, there have been moments in the last few weeks where it looks like Donnie Schatz is getting ready to cash some big checks in the month of money, and I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't start this weekend, because it appears that they're finally getting that thing tuned in. And, Scott, when you think about what they did, how many years – have we in the sprint car industry tuned on the Chevy engine?
Right.
We've tuned on that Chevy engine for 20 years,
right?
30 years?
Forever.
We're talking about a brand new Ford. Yeah, forever. We're talking about a brand new Ford engine that's, what, 3 years old?
Right.
You know, we tuned on the Chevy engine with 150 teams across the country and 17 engine builders.
Mm-hmm.
We're tuning on the Ford with one team and one engine builder.
Right.
You know, so the Ford thing is fascinating to me, because it is so different. I mean, this is a brand new science project that started with a blank sheet of paper, and competing against a science project that has years and years and years of multiple engine building geniuses and great race car drivers wheeling. And all of a sudden, it looks like that new science project might start to look really good. And so,
right.
I've been fascinated by the whole project. I know a lot of people within the Ford program from my days in NASCAR here. I know Ron Shaver's had his hands on that a lot. I love chatting with Ron Shaver. And then I talked to some of the people with Donnie's team. Talked to Donnie about it. And there's just a lot of work that has gone into this by a small group of people in a very short time. So it's interesting. It really, truly is what's happening there with that program.
All right, Steve, we're going to talk a little bit about Cup Racing. I think the big news of the week is Tyler Reddick signed with 2311. He's not going to start driving for the team until 24. Did you find that a little weird?
Well, I don't know. I can look at it both ways. It's not the first time we've had drivers announce plans a year and a half later. Kevin Harvick did it. We had a situation where Bowyer was a lame duck for one driver running for Harry Scott. He was going to take over for Tony Stewart.
That's true.
And there's probably been others. There was somebody, I forget who it was. Somebody was going to Hendrick. Casey Kane, I think, had a year of Red Bull before he went to Hendrick or something, you know. I mean, so it's not rare. The problem is this, okay? The reality is this. The reality is that Tyler Reddick is arguably the hottest prospect in the sport, as he sat there yesterday morning. Okay? Toyota, Denny Hamlin are not the only people that have talked to Tyler Reddick. I am sure that everybody has talked to Tyler Reddick. He is a very, very popular hot commodity in the garage area. The question becomes, when you sign a deal, when is the best time to announce it? When you're contracted for a year and a half with where you're at, do you try to sit on that, you know, for a year? I don't know that that's a good answer. Do you risk the fact that you get deep into the playoffs and, you know, let's say Tyler Reddick gets a good run and gets into the round of eight of the playoffs, and somebody in the Toyota camp says, well, we need to take him out at the knees, whispers to somebody about, well, yeah, in 2024, he's going to Denny Hamlin's team. What? Huh? Where?
What?
Here we go.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a weird dynamic that they announced it when they did, and it really, really is. It sucks for Richard Childress Racing. I understand that. I'm not really sure what the options are. If you've already got the agreement in place, why not get it out of the way and continue back racing?
Right.
And so stay tuned. We'll see how that goes.
RCR was not too happy about the announcement, were they? They put out a kind of a slamming statement, didn't they?
Yeah. It was like, congratulations, Tyler's been really, really good. We're focused on winning this championship this year and next year, and we don't like the timing of this announcement. You know what I mean? And it was almost that blunt. I might have been a little blunter than the statement, but not much.
No, I think you're right on target with that statement. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's obvious, but I don't know how you, I don't know, you know, again, you're RCR and you're running for a championship with Tyler Reddick this year and someone drops that bomb at the worst time. Well, that might be worse timing than this time.
You're
celebrating. You know, I don't know. I don't know what the answer is on that. I understand RCR's frustration. I get that. I think it's fair, but I just don't know what the answer is either.
It sounds to me as if RCR had some corporate America involvement about ready to sign with Tyler Reddick. It's what it sounds like to me. Doesn't it sound like that to you?
That would not surprise me.
Yeah.
That would not surprise me at all.
Yeah.
The problem is that if you're talking 3-year agreements starting in 2023, you better have the driver locked in for that 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with you on that. I think that there might have been something a little bit more there. Conversely, there might be someone over there with Denny Hamlin Racing that says, "You give me Tyler Reddick and I'm signing you a check."
Right.
You know, so that's a two-way street with that as well.
All right. So the big topic of the race last weekend at Atlanta Motor Speedway was Ross Chastain, right? I think that isn't that the biggest topic of the race, I would say.
Yeah, him and Corey LaJoie, but Ross Chastain throughout the course of the race, he certainly was the focal point of many of the cameras throughout the course of the race. That's for sure.
Yeah, are people? I hate to say this, are people being a little too hard on Ross Chastain, or does he deserve what he's getting right now? When people talk about how aggressive he is out on the racetrack, are they being a little hard on him, or do you think it's a little unfair?
Well, I have, as you know, Scott, I have never, ever driven a race car other than one media street stock race at Five Mile Point Speedway in Binghamton, New York. So I really wrestle with putting myself in a spot of knowing what drivers are doing, the driver mindset, the driver code, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable.
Right.
So I lean and look to other people that I respect as race car drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And one that I lean on and respect a lot is Jeff Burton. He, of course, is analyst for NBC Sports. And I think Jeff is respected in the garage area as a racer. And when he said he probably needs to start cleaning this stuff up a little bit, I tend to put a lot of credibility on a guy like Jeff Burton, who has driven race cars, who has been in the middle of scrums, who has seen over-aggressive racing, who has seen young talent come in the sport ready to take on the world and clean everyone's clock. You know, so I put a lot of weight in that. And if Jeff Burton says that he feels that Ross maybe needs to clean up some of this, then I'm probably going to lean in that camp, not because of anything I really think, but just out of respect for a guy who has raced and a guy who has done it before.
Right.
My other hunch is I think there's so many variables going into a championship run. And I think worried about that 11 car or worried about that 19 car, you know, or worried about this guy or worried about that guy, it doesn't need to be your focus when you're in this championship run. And I think you need to minimize the challenges, and particularly if Denny or someone like that gets knocked out of the playoffs early, which is quite likely. I don't think you want to be working on lapping him at Martinsville while you're trying to wrestle yourself into the final four.
Yeah. Well, there's no doubt Denny Hamlin's going to do some payback against Ross Chastain. Yeah. But let me just say this, though. You know, when I raced, and I raced for 35 years, I didn't want to be friends with anybody I raced with, Steve, to be honest with you. When they looked in their mirror and they saw me behind them, I wanted them to know that I might rough them up and I might move them out of the way. And I wanted that to be between their ears to speak of, you know. So I wanted to intimidate the people that I was behind. And I think that's what Ross Chastain's doing right now. I don't think he cares if he's friends with anybody in the pits, to be honest with you. And I think that when he gets in behind somebody, it gets them nervous. And I think that plays to his advantage a little bit. Do you disagree with me?
No, I don't, because I the driver that I probably spent the most time with in my motorsports career was Ricky Rudd. I did PR when he was Texaco Haviland.
Right.
Ricky hated the motor coach lot, hated grilling out in the motor coach lot because some other driver would come over and want to talk. I mean, he was just like you. I don't want to be friends with anybody because Sunday afternoon my job is to whoop every darn one of them.
Right.
And I don't want to be friends with a guy that I need to go out there and whoop. I don't need to be friends with a guy that, I need to go out there and race. And yeah. So I am philosophically with you, and I think that's where Ross, I agree with you. I think that's where Ross is at. I don't sense Ross wants to be part of the good old boys club.
Right.
You know, I mean I mean, you know, if he gets along with everybody, fine. If he doesn't get along with anybody, I sense that Ross Chastain is not worried about the Chastains and the Hamlins or the Chastains and the Truexes or the Chastains in this one or the Chastains in that one going right out to dinner. I don't sense. So I sense that Ross is very much like you. I believe that, you know, I mean, shoot, back in, my gosh, when he got his attention because he just went up there and won a Chip Ganassi cars and just roughed up Kevin Harvick in an Xfinity race at Darlington and took the win.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's like, huh, what are you doing? Well, he's always been this way. And so I like it. I tend to personally like it, but I wonder at what the worst, I think that is serving him well also, because
yeah.
I think that whenever they see that number one car in the mirror, you take a double look into that mirror. And if you've taken a double look into that mirror, then you've lost a little bit of focus on what you're doing getting down in the next corner. I think that's what Ross is wanting to do. He might have tiptoed over the edge a little bit, but I think you're on to exactly what he's doing.
You think that's going to be detrimental to his career because of his aggressiveness? Do you think that's going to hurt him in the long run before it's all said and done?
No, because owners want to win.
Right.
You know, I mean, you can say what you want. One guy not being critical of Ross Chastain is Justin Marks. And that's the guy that's paying the checks.
Right. That's the guy right
now. There's another group of people. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's another group of people that are not really all that worried about it. And those are the guys whose names are on the side of that race car who are getting diecast made every other week because he's been in victory lane again.
Yeah.
You know, winning takes care of a lot of that stuff.
Sure does.
It really does.
Yeah, sure does.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, before we let you go, give everybody, again, Steve Post joining us here, and his appearance is brought to you by Sage Fruit. We want to thank those guys for allowing Steve to come over here and do the show with us each and every week. Steve, what do you got coming up this week? What are you going to do?
Well, Scott, I am having I'm having a good week that's going to end sad, okay? I am doing, and it just laid out really well, I'm doing what I'm calling my home tracks week. Last night I announced the Legends races at Charlotte Motor Speedway, one of my home tracks. Tonight, weather permitting, I'm going out to Millbridge. Tomorrow I'm going to jump on an airplane. I'm going to fly back home to Pennsylvania. Friday night I'm going to go to Penkin Speedway, my Friday night home track when I was growing up as a kid. First track I ever announced at. Saturday night, I'm going to probably the track I spent most time at as a kid, 5 Mile Point Speedway in Binghamton, New York. I can't wait to get there, but I'm not going to want to leave, Scott, because the track has been sold.
Uh-oh.
And it will not be a racetrack after this year. And so I am going back to my original home track
for the last
time
to
say goodbye to a good friend, and that friend is a racetrack. So
darn
I'm
it.
Glad I'm doing it. I'm grateful that I get a chance to do it, but there's no place in the world I would rather be, but I'm not going to enjoy it either because that's what I'm doing this weekend. I'm going to go up to 5 Mile Point and have one more night at the old girl before my schedule doesn't allow me to get there the rest of the year. And at the end of the year, the new owner takes over, and it's not going to be a racetrack.
What are they doing? They're just going to tear it down. What are they building there, Steve?
It's New York State Electric and Gas, so it's the power company. And I don't know if they're building a substation or a distribution lot. I don't know what exactly their deal is with it, but it's not like a new owner that's going to, it's a company where you can imagine a company like New York State Electric and Gas knows what they're doing as far as property goes,
right,
and are not likely to lease property for racetracks.
It appears
unless Steve Post or somebody like-minded of Steve Post wins the lottery and can come in and save the day, it appears that that's the route we're headed to. And, you know, the place has been around since 1950. 72 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Not a lot of businesses last 72 years,
nope,
and fewer racetracks last for 72 years.
You know, that's a...
The guy that owns the place, his great-grandfather built the place.
Right.
And so the family has owned it. And as the process was going on, I talked to Andrew, the promoter, and it absolutely killed me to say it, that he is for himself and for where he's at in life and for that racetrack. It's been on the market for a while. Nobody has bought it for racing purposes. He made a decision that he hates to do, but he had to do. And I think ultimately it's the proper decision for him. It's not the decision we want, but it's the proper decision for him.
How old?
And I hate that, but I think that's fair.
How old is he?
He's probably just turning into his early 50s.
Yeah.
So he's still young.
Yeah.
But I think he's wore out. He's ran hard. He's you know.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of factors involved in it. I do think that's one of them. It's all he's known for 50 years. If he's 50, that's all he's known for 50 years. That's a long time to know only one thing. And here's the other reality, the market up there. Back in its prime, when it was Penn Can on Friday night and Five Mile Point on Saturday night, you were based around Binghamton, New York, that had EJ, you had Endicott Johnson Shoe Company, you had IBM, you had Singer Link, you had this company, you had that company, you had major military investment up there, major military bases up there, and you had two racetracks. In the past 25 years, the military is gone, IBM is gone, Endicott Johnson is gone, Singer Link is gone, and we used to have two racetracks, and now we have five racetracks because somebody got pissed off and wanted to build their own racetrack, and so we're taking a depressed economy and dividing the racing fans by five. And so someone's going to lose on that. Unfortunately, it's probably the original track up there, but that's part of the equation as well.
You know, it's a trend. We're seeing more and more racetracks just folding up the tent right now. It's sad, really, to be honest with you.
It really is, and it's such a weird dynamic because we get on our shows and we talk about, did you see the crowd here, and did you
right.
see the crowd there, and did you see there's people hanging off the rafters? And
right.
20 miles down the road, there's 12 modifieds running in front of 250 people.
Crazy.
I don't understand it. Where it's good, it's really, really good, and where it's bad, it's really, really bad.
Yeah, well, we're seeing a trend back here in the Midwest with A-Mods. They're starting to die on the vine right now. You know, we had seven of them out at Lakeside Speedway the other night. It's not very good.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Yeah, not good.
Well, the problem is you have seven cars show up at the track, and are fans going to continue to come out and watch that?
No.
The casual fan?
No.
The not family members of those seven guys? No,
right.
We're not going to do it.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Steve. Well, we appreciate you taking the time to join us every week, buddy. You don't know what it means to us. We really appreciate you doing it. I know you got a busy schedule, and you always take the time to join us here on Wednesdays. We thank you so much for doing so.
Always good to chat, Scott. We appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, buddy. There you have it, Steve Post. I want to remind everybody about the track tribute that's going on up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum right now. They've got videos, driver uniforms, helmets, memorabilia. They've got a bunch of cars up there from Ascot Park that was in Gardena, California. It's one of the great racetracks of all time. You got to get up there and check out this great track tribute to Ascot Park up at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum. And let's remind everybody that they still have the raffles going on for the IMSA GTLM Championship Edition C8R Corvette. They're going to be drawing that on Saturday, August 13th, during the Knoxville Nationals. And again, this car is only one of 1,000, folks. I've seen one for sale for $150,000. We saw one on Barrett Jackson go for $300,000. This car is worth a lot of money. So you need to register and buy some raffle tickets for this IMSA GT LM Championship Edition C8R Corvette. Again, they're going to be drawing on August 13th during the Knoxville Nationals. If you can't make it to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, you can always do it online, register online, or buy your raffle tickets online. Corvette, the letter C, the number 8, the letter R, contest.com. That's Corvette, C8R, contest.com. If you'd like to register and have a chance to win this great race car, that's what I'm going to call it. This is a race car, folks. IMSA GTLM Championship Edition C8R Corvette. And it is a beautiful car. And don't forget about the sprint car raffle that's going on as well. They got a 2022 410 sprint car that they're going to be raffling off on December 16th. That's Friday, December 16th. And again, if you can't make it to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, you can always do it online at sprintcarraffle.com. That's sprintcarraffle.com. Again, they're going to be giving that away on December 16th. And if you need to, if you can't get up to the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum, again, go to sprintcarraffle.com in order to buy a ticket. All right, Austin, you got anything you want to add in here before we're done, bud? You got any thoughts before we close? Anything there that Steve and I talked about that you want to chime in on? No?
No, I'm really interested to see how Larson's Sprint Car Series takes off.
Yeah.
And see how the race in August goes, see how the kickoff event is, and hopefully we could finally get Sprint Car Racing the money it deserves. I mean, we've ran in the shadow for late model racing the past couple of years, and it's time that, you know, it costs about the same to go do it. The late models just don't go through cars as much as we do when we crash, so a little money compensation wouldn't hurt. But yeah, I mean, I hope it's something they can build off of for the years to come and finally just help us make a living at it.
How many of these races are going to pay $50,000 to win? Do you
know? Two are going to pay $50,000. So there's 12 races. Two pay $50,000. And the other 10 pay $23,000 to win.
Still need to bump that up a little bit more.
You know,
Flo, get off your money. Come on.
No, I hopefully the second year they can double it.
Yeah.
The first year, I'm just glad they're doing it. That's more money. That's more $50,000 to win races we can have in our pocket.
They got to see their investment and how it's going to go first, right? I would think.
Yeah, I mean,
do it 1 year, see how successful it is, and then plan on increasing the dollar amount the next year.
We saw it happen with the Flood Racing Night in America series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So hopefully they can get it going, and you know, I like to see, you know, Larson, you know, here in the future continue up, you know, doing this for sprint car racing. It's a sport he that's got him to where he is, and you know, we appreciate what he's doing to give back to it.
I remember when Kyle Larson was 15 years old racing at Cottage Grove, and I had to ask his dad to go in there and wake him up to get him out of the toter home to come out and do an interview with me when he was 15. You know where Lee Spencer first heard of Kyle Larson? Kirk and I. We told her one day, keep an eye on this guy, Kyle Larson. He's going to be coming up through the ranks. And she said, you know, you guys were the first ones to ever tell me about Kyle Larson.
I remember the first time, well, Dad saw him before I did. They got to see him probably about 15 or 16. Race a crown cart to coin on the mile and just smoke them all. I mean, yeah. He as a young kid, he put it on them.
Yeah, no, he was good for sure. He's still good. Oh, by the way, winning last night at Attica. All right, well, that's it for the show today, folks. We're going to do it all over again tomorrow. We hope that you'll join us. We start at 12 noon Central Time. We hope that you'll come back and hang out with Austin and I tomorrow, right here on Mostly Motorsports. It's all been brought to you by our good friends over at Lucas Oil Products. It works. So we'll see you tomorrow right here on Mostly Motorsports. For Austin O'Neill, for Kirk Elliott, I'm Scott Traylor saying we'll see you tomorrow. See you next time.
One of the main reasons for poor vehicle performance is a dirty fuel system. It can cause decreased fuel economy and actually do harm to your engine over time. By adding mucus fuel treatment to your vehicle, it cleans and lubricates the entire fuel system. Pump, carburetors, fuel injectors, and valves as you drive. It also improves your vehicle's performance. It's a non-solvent product designed to protect both gasoline and diesel engines. Mucus fuel treatment. It works.
Go harder, faster, stronger with Rod and Supply. Whether you are running industrial, farming equipment, or a race car, Rod and Supply has the assortment of rod ends, radius rods, and specialty products that will help you lead the field in performance. Our superior design means our rod ends last longer and perform better, giving you the edge on the track and saving you money. Contact Rod and Supply or order online today at rodandsupply.com. We don't just sell them, we race them. Rodandsupply.com, serving the racing community for over 30 years.
Race fans, the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum is open 7 days a week, year-round, for you to come in and check out all of the wonderful race cars on display in the museum. And our online store at SprintCarStuff.com is open 24 hours a day for you to check out everything that we have in stock for Sprint Car fans. Whether it's for a birthday, anniversary, or Christmas, SprintCarStuff.com has it all. That's at the National Sprint Car Hall of Fame and Museum in Knoxville.
At Lucas Oil, we take pride in creating problem-solving products to make your car care easier. We protect your vehicle and make it run longer so you can focus on the things that matter most. Whether it's commuting to work, visiting a loved one, taking the kids where they need to go, going to the big game, or anywhere life takes you, Lucas Oil is committed to getting you there for all of life's important moments. Lucas Oil, it works.